Hey everybody, Bill Pritchard, WrestleZone.com here. I have Colin Tess here and Dominic D'Angelo here, also of WrestleZone with me. WrestleMania 37 is in the books. Two nights of action. We just saw moments ago, Roman Reigns retained the Universal Championship. I won't say stunning fashion. I'll say it was a confident fashion. He pinned Edge and Daniel Bryan, took advantage of the situation. A lot of people thought going in he was gonna lose no matter what, and he ends the night still champion, stands tall in Raymond James Stadium. A lot to talk to, a lot to get into. So I'll throw it to you guys. What was your favorite match of tonight?
It had to be the main event for me. I mean, I had this one definitely. I was looking forward to it. Sooner, like even before Daniel Bryan got involved, I was looking forward to this one the most. And even just the past couple weeks, it's been really cool to see all three guys looking like they really could come out victorious. And, you know, it's always nice to have a main event that's really unpredictable. And so going into this one, I really didn't know who would win. And it's interesting how kind of both world title matches were very similar in the sense that like the champions were very much viewed as, you know, guaranteed to lose, I guess, for, you know, just. But to put it plainly, and then they both won, and that really surprised me to have both guys retain, especially Roman. I guess, you know, he has been a more impressive champion than Bobby, but it still felt like this was Edge's match to lose in a lot of ways, and then he lost, and I don't know where we go from here, especially because the way that that happened, like we saw the two concertos, so made me kind of think, you know, one if not both of them might be getting written off for a little bit. Especially given that, you know, they are both part-timers at this point. But I thought it was really good overall. Big one for Roman, and I definitely enjoyed this one the most.
I'm with Colin here. I think, I think that the main event was the match of the night. Especially, too, the not being able to determine who was going to win that match exactly was a lot of intrigue to it. Because, like, you could see any of those guys walking out with the title, especially Edge and especially Roman. I was, you know, and personally, like, rooting for, like, Daniel Bryan as the underdog all the time and stuff like that. You want to see him. And he's the true blue babyface in the match. So, like, you'd think there's that possibility of the true blue babyface walking away with the title and closing out the show, the first live show that WWE has been able to put on well over a year. So there's a lot of that going on. But I thought just the ending of it with Roman pinning both men, if you're going to do it, you got to do that in an emphatic way. And they did it. That's a great way to just further add more heat to Roman Reigns and him just double pinning those guys, two top stars that WWE has been pushing for, you know, months on end. It's a very, very good way to end the show. And I think that match itself really elevated a night that needed to be elevated, because at night two, I did not live up to expectations, in my opinion.
We'll get into the rest of the card as we go through the show, but I'm seeing quite a bit of opinions pointing out that, you know, if you look at the pin, the ref didn't start counting until so there you go. It pulled up. Edge was covering Daniel Bryan at first, but the three count was finished first for Edge. So it wasn't exactly a double pin. So it leaves room for, you know, this week coming. Like, you know, we still have to go through Raw and NXT, which is now on Tuesdays. But, you know, there's going to be plenty of conversation leading up to Friday SmackDown. Where do you see this shaking out? Like, do you think we get a rematch at Backlash, like a straight up triple threat? Do we think one or the other has, you know, like maybe we get Daniel Bryan versus Edge for another title shot? Like, where do you guys see this shaking out?
Go ahead, Colin.
I mean, like I said, I think, at least in the short term, maybe one of these guys will take some time off here, potentially Edge, given that he's been around pretty regularly. You know, he could kind of use this as a reason to go away for a little bit, just, you know, to kind of protect his schedule, for lack of a better word. It would make a lot of sense if they do kind of want to run this back based on the ending we saw here. If we saw Edge and Daniel Bryan face off, given the kind of tension we've seen between them, and in this match, Edge will do it like snap, like he hit a concerto and made it clear, like, you know, no mutual respect, no, you know, nothing like that. Like, he wasn't to do whatever it took to win. So there's definitely a pretty, you know, logical progression to a match there. I think that's a match a lot of people would want to see. Maybe not Backlash, but maybe on the road to SummerSlam, even something to that effect. I think that's kind of what I would expect to see at this point.
Yeah, you know, if they were going to have some sort of a Backlash here, it would probably, I would want to lean more towards Edge and Roman, because, you know, that's originally what we were supposed to get, was those two guys. So, and then Daniel Bryan did get in the mix later on, but like Edge, I think there's still that very much intrigue of seeing Edge in singles action. And, you know, he initiated that first concerto on Daniel Bryan, and then Roman Reigns coming in and Jey Uso messing it all up and everything. I think it adds to a story of having Edge become another still in that mix. And I'm with Colin too, in the regard that like, it would be cool to actually see one of these guys go away for a little bit, just to kind of get, you know, okay, absence makes the heart grow fonder, and then bring them back. Daniel Bryan in particular, I think would be very good to do in that particular idea. What do you think, Bill?
I don't want to see just a straight up triple threat. Mm-hmm. I mean, Edge didn't waste his Royal Rumble shot, but you know, he used it, he exhausted it, so he doesn't really have a claim to the title anymore. I also don't want to see them do like some stupid tournament where it's like obvious that these two are going to get the title shot again and have them just face off with some lower card guys. So, I mean, honestly, I'd be totally fine with straight up Edge versus Daniel Bryan, winner gets the title shot at Backlash, and really like sell it for that match taking place in like 2 weeks on SmackDown. Like, I know you like, they still do the like, have the mentality where you're building toward the pay-per-view and the TV show's supposed to get people to tune into that, but this, like, you still need to make your TV shows important, so why not do the number one contenders match like that? They've done it in the past few years, especially on SmackDown, where they've branded it as like, you know, almost like a super show, but it's really just it's just title matches with like hype behind it, and number one contenders matches with hype behind it, instead of getting to the day of the show. Oh yeah, by the way, we're you know, you guys are in a gauntlet match and the winner gets a title shot at the next pay-per-view. Like, I think we're not done here, and I just think that they need to keep one of the two involved for right now, not both. But I think both are eventually going to get a singles title match before Roman's before Roman's reign is ended.
I mean, speaking of which, it's interesting that, you know, tonight felt like the night to end the reign at this point. You know, now that he got through this match, it's hard to see a good way that this reign could end. You know, if it's a one-on-one match versus Edge, not to say that'd be a bad way, but, you know, kind of, again, down to draw the comparison, but like with Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley, it felt like such a kind of ready-made path forward. Like, you give Drew the title for the WrestleMania moment, you give Edge this win for his own, you know, that storybook moment. But now that Roman has won this match, it's just hard to see it. We have this comment here from Scott Chaffetz saying like, well, oh, like, what if Roman keeps the belt for two more years so that he could face The Rock for the title? That's a long time. And especially with WWE having so much TV and having monthly pay-per-views, I don't know if I see that. If anything, he might lose it for a while and then regain it for that match. But it's hard to see it, especially if you say that whoever dethrones Roman will be someone other than one of these two guys. I feel like he'll be keeping the title either way for the next couple months.
Yeah, I think they should try to keep it on him as long as possible until there is the right contender that comes along. I mean, if you're going to make a change, I think tonight would have been the way when to do it. But I think that they do create a lot of intrigue, because they really did hammer the point home too after the fact that who will step up to challenge Roman Reigns next. They kind of made that moment like, who is in line for that? And so, you could definitely see almost like a how we're used to the early 2000s in the Backlash when like The Rock, you know, came back or whatever, and then who comes back but Goldberg or shows up. So you could see somebody big. I'm not saying Goldberg showing up, but somebody that effect of that name power or something like that shows up the next night or SmackDown it would be, and then you could definitely see that. But also, who lost the title tonight but Big E? So he could be positioned as the next guy to step up against Roman Reigns too. There's another possibility for that.
There you go. There's a natural transition into the rest of the card. Big E lost due to what we used to know. We called him Daba Kato,
Kato.
Until tonight. He was also Baba Tunde. It looks like this is the Colonel Aziz that we were talking about earlier today. There was a report that we posted. WWE filed a trademark for a man or a character named Colonel Aziz, A-Z-E-E-Z. But nobody knew what it was about. And, you know, I will point to historically, usually they do this well in advance of a character debuting. Like this, I don't remember the date of the filing offhand, but
Wednesday.
So Wednesday and then Sunday at WrestleMania, this character debuts. Like it's pretty close to if this is how it pans out, and it, you know, it's like you can be 99.9% sure that that's what happened, but usually it's like, I'll use the way as an example. Like they trademarked the way, and it was like months, weeks or months before Johnny Gargano like did that whole thing on NXT. But it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here, because it's not really like Apollo Crews needs a heater, as the, you know, the phrase is going around. I'll borrow from a phrase I've seen people use today, and cheap plug, my interview with Rhino last week. He said he's the heater for Violent by Design and Impact. So go check that out after the stream. But Apollo Crews is not a guy that needs a heater. So where do you guys see this going? Like, obviously, Colonel Aziz or Baba Tunde or Daba Kato, whatever we're going to call him now, he's an imposing figure, but you know, what do you see him adding to the new Apollo Crews and the title reign? I'll throw it to Colin first.
I want to say, like, I wrote up the news about the trademark thing. I think it was this morning. So they filed it on Wednesday. And like you said, Bill, usually these things are done ahead of time. So maybe this was a relatively last minute kind of, inspiration that they wanted to roll with for tonight. But I had a hunch. I saw the name Commander Aziz, and I'm like, it's for Apollo. It's somebody that's going to be with Apollo. And I just had this like bad feeling that pretty much what happened tonight would happen. You know, I talked about on SmackDown Double Down where like I'm still not really feeling this new gimmick for Apollo. Like it feels, I don't know, not necessarily in poor taste, but just the way that it does feel like it's definitely a gray area. It's good for Paul to have like an actual character. And I love that at first, but the more we've gone along here and we've seen the accent, and now we got the Nigerian drum fight and all these things. And now we got Commander Aziz, presumably, I would assume that's what this is. I don't know. Cause now it's kind of like a militia kind of thing. And you're still leaning into this like semi Black Panther, the superhero character, kind of like what we saw in the movie. And like part of that's cool, but at the same time, like because they're leaning on it so heavily, or at least it feels like that, I don't know. And Apollo did, like, on paper Apollo didn't need a heater, but he did need a way to win this match, because Robert DeFelice and I talked about it on the SmackDown show. If Crews lost this match, pretty much stick a fork in this gimmick, because he's already lost a couple title matches, and if when you have a new gimmick you need to win, you know, because otherwise you can't be taken seriously as a credible contender. So by having someone kind of come in, especially a big guy like, I guess let's say Commander Aziz, come in, I mean that helps Big E kind of, you know, still look pretty strong in the loss. And like I said, I think it was Friday night. Like, I really didn't want Big E to lose because I want him to challenge for the world title sooner rather than later. So by having this kind of path forward here, he doesn't look bad in this defeat. And instead, it's just a good way for Apollo to win. And, you know, good for him. And clearly they're invested in this gimmick, however you feel about it. So I can't say I'm not curious. You know, I don't know what this whole Commander Aziz thing will, what that will offer, how that will unfold. But, you know, good for Apollo. I'm glad that they're kind of doubling down on this. Well, that they're at least not like pulling the plug, or that they didn't kind of, you know, try to move on from it already. So at least they're committed to it. And I'm it's not beyond redemption. Don't get me wrong. I think it still could turn out to be very good. And this feud overall has benefited both Cruz and Big E. Big E definitely looked very legitimate, or like more serious, and he has throughout this feud. So I've liked that. So that's been good for him. And now hopefully Apollo can kind of move on, and Big E can move on to better things for both of them. That's where I come off on it.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is, it feels very, this whole, I like the look Apollo gives off with the Nigerian colors and everything like that. And even just the demeanor, his body language is very good and stuff too. But yeah, I feel it feels so manufactured at this point in time, where it's just like they're glomming it on a little too much. And, you know, with the theme of the match and all that stuff. As far as him having a heater, he doesn't need one necessarily, but it does kind of elevate him a little bit more. And the only thing that I have an issue with too in that regard is that we kind of see that already with AJ Styles. He's got the heater, like, you know, so it's like we kind of get that already. So it makes sense for him to maybe have somebody beside him, but it's just that it's the same. It's kind of, you're getting the same vibe on Raw. So it's just, I don't know. Ultimately, it's great. I think this is what needed to happen for Apollo, and like him getting the Intercontinental title, and then you establishing him as that champion, I think is only going to be beneficial to not only the SmackDown product, but to Apollo himself. So, you know, I'm not tapping out on it. I think it's engaging to an extent. I think they do need to put a little more oomph behind it, especially with this new character getting introduced, who we've known by multiple names. And now, right now, he doesn't even have a name, because they're like, who is this guy? Like, we've seen him. Yeah. We've seen him before.
Yeah, it's not the guy that was just on Raw Underground like 5 months ago. It's right. Just mysterious guy in a military outfit. But I feel like with the stipulation itself, it does two things. It makes it easier for Apollo to win the match, like, straight up, but then it also makes it easy to introduce this guy. But it's like, why not just let him win, and then maybe the rematch on SmackDown, like, then have him debut?
Yeah.
Because it kind of, I don't know. I'll agree with, you know, the sentiment here that there's room to improve it, and they can save it. And there's a lot of things they can do with it in the next few weeks. But as far as this ending, it was just a little confusing, strictly because they were like, who's this mysterious man? Not the guy that we had on Raw Underground, like, fighting with Shane McMahon. It's like, who's this mysterious guy? And it was just kind of like,
we're not dumb.
Sometimes they need to just give the audience credit instead of selling it like they did tonight. But
yeah.
One other mysterious happening tonight was the opening match of the card. It was the long-awaited match between The Feud and Randy Orton, and by proxy, Alexa Bliss. This started off really hot. Like, I know the whole entire feud has been hit or miss. This really felt like exciting going in, and the Fiend's entrance with like the transformation in the tunnel, and he was like classic Fiend, and then the Jack in the Box, and he does the clothesline off the Jack in the Box, and then I was just kind of like, all right, I'm over this. Like, the red lights, and
where's
then
the lights? Ending
there's just like The Fiend is a cool character, but it's like, why do you keep doing this dumb hokey stuff with it? It's like, yeah, I get the black goo from the face and Orton spitting out goo, and the red lights do not make for a good match to watch, whether you're there or whether you're on TV. It looks silly. Like, I get what, like, I understand, like, oh yeah, they think like, oh, the Fiend, he's scary, like red lights are scary, but it's like, I still want to watch him wrestle a wrestling match. And then the Alexa thing, I'm assuming we're going to get a follow-up as soon as tomorrow, but it was just kind of like, why did you make that the opening match if you're
right,
gonna really just make, like, you're going to start with this very polarizing result where people are going to love it or hate it. Like, usually you start off a show with like a really hot match. Like, we could talk about this one later, but Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn should have been the match that started off tonight, or Sheamus versus Riddle should have been the match to start off tonight. Like, what are you guys thinking about the Fiend and Randy Orton after we saw everything that happened tonight?
I've been checked out of the Fiend for a very long time. And when Orton came out to kick off, I'm like, all right, you know, you're going to do it. Like, get us invested, like, right away. And like, the Fiend comes out. It was an interesting way to introduce him. I'm like, okay, I can buy into it. But Bill, like, we talked about this in the chat. Like, like you said, he lariats Randy, and I'm just waiting for those lights to come back on, and they don't. And then it's just, you know, the pacing of the match and different things like that. And then just, it's so hard for me to get into the Fiend. And then, you know, the simple fact of that ending where like Bliss shows up looking like Carrie with like Hershey syrup all over her face and stuff. It's just like, all right, you're done. I'm over it. And then just like that non-flat, you know, finish. It's just, yeah, if you're going to give us something, you have to give us something definitive to open up night two of WrestleMania. This was nothing. And we don't have a follow-up. Like, we're going to get one tomorrow, probably, I hope, but I don't even care at this point. So it was a bad opener. And you look back at how many years ago that first match between those two were, and that was really bad. No, I'm just out on it. I mean, like, they screwed Bray and the Fiend up for me just a while ago, and this just continues to fuel that fire.
I will say that, like, I've still been very engaged with the Fiend storyline, optimistic about it, invested. You know, I've enjoyed it, and they've made plenty of missteps, but I've enjoyed it for the most part, pretty much from the start. And then, you know, the whole he got burned alive, and he went away. And he stayed away, and he stayed away. And he finally came back, and I like the way they did that. But this, you know, and it sounds funny, right? In a storyline where a guy got set on fire, we got the black goo multiple times. All these things, you know, this, some the Jack in the Box, and all these things. And I don't know. I like the entrance. I will say that. I thought that was cool. I got some like Freddy Krueger, like 1980s, like Nightmare on Elm Street vibes, or like, it was because I didn't think they'd be able to do anything special like that, because this was a live show. They didn't have the Thunderdome or anything like that. So at least with this, that kind of brought in that element. The match itself, I think, was like roughly 6 minutes, and you know, like both you guys said, you want a nice hot match to start WrestleMania, especially, you know, night one was really good. A lot of the comments have said that night one was so much better than night two, and there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah, this match opened the show. Not great, especially with the questionable the finish. And then we had, it was an overall a slow start. With this, you know, everyone thought the Fiend would essentially avenge his lost Randy Orton. That would make sense. And then in some ways, like, he came out, he was his old self. I thought, okay, you know, maybe they're kind of setting him up to be a title contender again. You know, we got the red lights, and even though most people hate that, I was like, maybe we're kind of going to go back to, you know, the Fiend in the title scene. And again, that would make some sense. But then we had Alexa Bliss come out there. And I like the idea that she's Sister Abigail somehow. I think that could be fun. I mean, I'm a horror movie fan, so that's one reason why I've been so engaged with this. But every time they do something like this, I think, okay, here's how they could like kind of make it make sense, and they don't do it, and like it just feels like they do some things for shock value, or they're not entirely thought through, or they really expect the viewer to like. It's funny, Dominic, you said a minute ago like about Daba Kato. They pretend that the viewer's not intelligent, but sometimes they think we're too intelligent because they don't fully explain things, and they force you to connect the dots that they never follow up on. So right. This, I'm like, it could very well turn out that we never get this really explained. And then that'll make this all the more, you know, all the more questionable, because then it'll be like, well, what was the point? What does Randy Orton do next? I mean, maybe they will do the Firefly Funhouse rematch at Backlash. That would make some sense. But I don't know. This was not good for The Fiend. I mean, he beat John Cena last year. And now he goes to losing to Randy Orton in 6 minutes. Not a good look. Very disappointing, especially when he'd been gone for essentially like 3 months. Call it 3 months. I know I was very disappointed about that. And it was like kind of just deflating. If you're someone that really likes The Fiend, if you like haven't entirely given up yet, this was a pretty deflating way to start WrestleMania, you know, the biggest show of the year. If it wasn't Midnight, I'd go on like a really, you know, heated rant on it. But I will say, like, it's very disappointing. I'm hopeful that you'll get some nice follow-up tomorrow night. Because we're like this gimmick is like kind of like Apollo Crews at this point. Like, you gotta like do something as you're really gonna start getting to the point of no return, you know, if they keep just kind of butchering the way they're handling it at this point.
I don't know. Like, I feel like every time the Fiend gets a few weeks off, it's like, okay, he's back, and there's like this cool factor, and then almost within minutes of him like doing something on whatever show he's on, it's like, oh yeah, that, you know, they screwed the pooch on that. Like
they
really quick. Like yeah. Tonight, like you said, the match was under 6 minutes, and I'm like 30 seconds in, I'm like, yeah, I kind of don't care anymore. And I'm not saying go as far as like get rid of the character and retool him. Like, it's not that bad, but it's just like, you introduced him and Seth Rollins like literally beat the hell out of him, like pretty much was attempted murder, and still came back, and then Randy Orton sets him on fire, still comes back, looks really cool, and he had like all the melted skin and like that whole thing, and it was like, and then he just loses for an RKO and like some black goo that, you know, he's kind of been controlling, if you want to look at it like that. So it's like, I more or less want to see them like get their ducks in a row, and you know, like if you're gonna make him like this super powerful, like supernatural powerful being or whatever, like whatever you're trying to do, like just make it make sense. Like, he's either gonna be that, or he's gonna be like some goofy dude in a mask that also hosts a TV show and he's beatable, but like, pick your battles. Like, he shouldn't be losing to an RKO based on a distraction at WrestleMania, and he can survive everything else that came before it.
It's like, you look at it and, you know, it looks like they're setting up a feud with obviously Bliss and The Fiend. And like, how are you going to necessarily pay that off and make it work? Like, we've gotten that with Randy Orton and stuff, but it's, I don't know. It's just, it's so hard. They goof troop it up with The Fiend. Like, they do some neat stuff with him. And like, I remember being super invested when he first, I was like, this guy creeps me the F out. And like, you're like, who is going to be his next victim? When they first started off, it was just like, oh man, he's eliminating people. Like, he's taking people out. And now all that allure is just kind of gone. And you're just like, okay, when are they going to trip up again? Like, what's going to be the big heavy mallet this time around? Where it's just like, you know, you only get so many chances. And, this was a horrible way to start him back off and try to recharge him back up. Like, he returns and he loses. It's just like, you can't do that to, and if I were them, I would get rid of him and just repackage Bray yet again. But
I mean, it's worth noting that after the match, Alexa and Bray both disappeared. So if they want to, that's a pretty good out that they could just say, all right, you know, back to the drawing board. I hope they don't do that. You know, that would just feel like an entire waste. I will say, you know, one of the odd, like, not downsides, just like, you know, effects of this WrestleMania. You know, this is the only show, or I'll say was the only show with live fans for now. So we're going to go back to the Thunderdome and that kind of thing. An environment that's equipped and, you know, known for these cinematic things, because you don't have the live crowds and all that. So if we want an outcome that makes sense, maybe we do get Alexa versus Bray in some entirely cinematic kind of thing. I don't know how that would work, but I think that would be a possibility at this point, because I do think Alexa did cost him the match essentially, so it does feel like that's where we will head eventually. And I'd like to see that at this point. That feels like something different. You know, we've seen Randy and the Fiend for a couple months now, and Alexa versus the Fiend is something that could, if they, you know, like Bill said, if they get their ducks in a row, it could be fun. But I think that could be one way to essentially salvage this at this point.
It's tough. They're in a tough spot, I think, with this.
Tough spot. Yeah. I've seen quite a few people tonight say, okay, maybe Alexa's controlling all of this, and then maybe Alexa's controlling all of it, and she sensed something was wrong with Bray, and then she's going to get this crew, and he's going to have a face turn, like all this, like the James, we're waiting to see if James, we're waiting to see if John Clark shows up. He's on site at WrestleMania. I wanted to address that quick. If he can join us and he's, you know, has a good Wi-Fi connection and he makes it out, we'll invite him on. If not, I'm sure we'll have him talking about the experience of the weekend on the Raw post show tomorrow, or let him do his own thing. Definitely want to get his opinion as far as like the actual experience being back at live events. I know he's very excited to be back at okay, different conversation. But yeah, James, you'll hear from John either tonight or tomorrow, definitely within this week, about his WrestleMania experience. But really quick to close out the Alexa conversation, I feel like the more you try to like plug in excuses and try to make like what happened make sense in hindsight, it's going to make it that much worse. So it's like,
yeah,
either see the plan through or just not get rid of them and not take them off TV, but like get them away from Randy Orton, get them away from this whole, you know, like Alexa controlling him thing, like just literally switch it up again. And I don't really know what they do. Like, do you see a potential opponent for him like on Raw right now? Because I'm hard pressed to think of one that just makes sense with little explanation, except for like maybe Edge, and that, you know, that's a reach right now.
That is a reach.
Ugh. Yeah.
I see, like, honestly, it's kind of almost like they set him up. I think, Colin, you mentioned, kind of hinted at it, was like maybe a babyface turn for him, you know, in some form or fashion. People do. I mean, like, you hear that reaction he got before, you know, it died out, was he got a good reaction coming out. So, I mean, you know, and I'm sure a lot of the people do are still very engaged by the Fiend and like his look and everything like that. To your point, Colin, like, you had a lot of horror fans and stuff like that. There's a pretty big crossover with that in wrestling. So, I mean, you know, there is that. So, I mean, a babyface turn in some weird way with the Fiend might kind of work, but it's like, to your point, Bill, who are they going to line up against them is the question. I could think like Finn Balor, maybe they bring back to Raw or something like that. That would be kind of cool. Demon, I don't know. Those are my guesses, but that's kind of it.
What about on, yeah. I mean, just for, you know, argument's sake, anybody on SmackDown that they could do it with? Because I feel like they need to do something, but I'm not really sure where they go with him from here.
I mean, there's the potential for the Fiend and Roman, but it feels like they're like keeping Roman as far away from the Fiend as possible, because that had seemed like the direction last year, and then they decided, no, we don't want to do that, and they literally just put them on different brands and, you know, separated them as much as they could. Because that's most definitely a match where neither one can lose, and you know, whoever lost that potential match would be like crushed. Especially at this point, Roman has the title, so I don't see that happening right now. It is really hard to think, though. I like the idea of Finn Balor. You know, there isn't the history there. Edge would be a stretch, but there'd be at least the history. He has a lot of kind of like the John Cena, just, you know, that long tenure for so they could play with, like in a Firefly Funhouse match. DJ Cassier saying maybe the Fiend and Seth again, but I don't know how we can make that work right now. It's hard to say, you know, especially just the way that it'd be one thing if he won, but you know, kind of coming off of this really crushing loss, it's kind of hard to know what to do with him at this point.
I could kind of see them going back. Although we all don't want it, we can see them going back to Randy Orton again, where it's like Alexa Bliss has Randy Orton under her control or something to that effect, where it's like the roles are reversed, where it's like Randy Orton is more so, you know, the mystical, you know, being at this point against a fiend that's still mystical, but is going, it's two supernatural forces going up against one another. I can kind of see that him as the surrogate for Alexa Bliss and continuing a backlash feud with these two.
That feels like the most realistic thing at this point, because there otherwise the options do seem to be really, really lacking.
Right. Yeah. It's tough. It's just a real weird angle.
We'll have to wait and see, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, who knows, but, one other match, I'm kind of going in chronological order here, is the second match on the card tonight was Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler retain their titles against Natalya and Tamina. This one also suffered from, I can't pinpoint the main issue. All four of them like really gave it their all. But the main thing that people took away from the match was Nia Jax yelling, "I'm King Kong," and what you got, like trash talking at Tamina towards the end. I feel like this one kind of suffered in part because of what came before it with The Fiend and Randy Orton. But do you guys see any holes in this match? In, you know, specifically like why maybe the crowd didn't win them back, or, you know, any sort of feedback on stuff you did like?
I mean, I will say Tamina was over. I did not expect Tamina of all people to get like pretty resounding chance. Because the narrative heading into this match was, you know, Tamina and Natalya are two people that have been really underrated, underutilized. But at the same time, it didn't feel like a lot of people wanted to see them win this match. At least that's kind of the sense that I got. And then we go into this live arena, and Tamina's getting pretty, you know, almost universal chance. And that caught me by surprise. You know, good for her. She and Natalya both are two people that have been there for like pretty much 10 years plus now. And so they definitely, in that sense, deserve to win. And I think just because the crowd actually was into Tamina here, it was kind of even more disappointing that she lost. Until you said it, Bill, I forgot this was the second match. I'm like, I know that the Fiend match was so like crushing, and that's why the show had a bad start. But then because people were so into Tamina and she lost, that made the show like even just the first hour or so was pretty rough, because, you know, these two matches are just such a letdown. But in terms of the match itself, yeah, like, I saw a sense that something did feel off. They, you know, the 4-1 didn't really click for whatever reason. And like, not that it was a bad match, but it did feel kind of just not as good as it could have been. I say it every time I see Shayna Baszler on TV, but she's one of the best strikers in WWE. I mean, every time she's out there just throwing these brutal like kicks and knees and everything. I mean, every time I hope that someday soon she'll get the, you know, just the chance to kind of be on her own. I thought that Tamina, at the very least, Tamina and Taya would win this match so that Jax and Baszler could break up and we finally get rid of that. Nope. You know, at this point, it feels like they're just going to be together forever. And that's not a good thing in my mind. I was done with this team back in January, and they're still going strong. And this kind of like what I said about Roman Reigns, this felt like the chance to break them up. And now that they didn't, it's like, okay, well, now what? And for all I know, maybe they'll lose the titles on Raw or SmackDown this week, but you know, it always feels like WrestleMania is the time to do changes like that. So I don't know. I was very surprised to see that Tamina definitely got that reception. And I didn't think the match was bad, but I do think that it was pretty lackluster.
Yeah. Bill, I think the only thing I could really think of is kind of what you were saying is like people were kind of less deflated by the opener. And, you know, I don't obviously like Nia Jax is not the most greatest worker in the ring. And then you have like Tamina, who's pretty darn stiff too. But like, you know, it was wild. I did not expect Tamina to get like that kind of reaction. And, you know, I thought too, they won the gauntlet match on night one. So it really made sense for them to kind of go over at this point. And like, you know, I'm somebody that's always been invested in Natalya and been rooting for her to kind of get her just moment in the sun in a lot of ways. And this was the chance to really do it. It was like, okay, she's wins a title and on WrestleMania. And this would be a good payoff. Like she deserves it. She's worked for it. And it's not like I wouldn't even consider it like a gold watch. I'd say it just makes sense to do it at this point in time. And they just didn't do it. And I don't know. It's just like those two first matches, those outcomes of it too. It's just ugh. And you know, I'm with you too, Colin, like Shayna Baszler, I want to see her get her shot. Like she's never really, since she's got called up to the main roster, she has not gotten really a very fair shake. I don't think they've portrayed her in the right fashion, whether it was with Becky Lynch and like that feud. I don't think they just built her up and propped her up in the right fashion that they did with like NXT and stuff, where she's just this like world beater and stuff. And so, you know, I thought, yes, this was the time to kind of end this whole thing and move on, not just for Shayna, but elevate those two veterans where they're for surprisingly to that crowd, but they were very hot. So it's just like, I don't know. It seemed like a missed opportunity for me.
The match that I will say that saved the show or brought back the crowd was the third match. It was Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. I'm reluctant to say Logan Paul had anything to do with it. I mean, he was there pretty much for the post-match stunner, which is great. It's going to get some, I guess, mainstream press. I don't really, like, I know him and I know he's viral, but I don't know how mainstream he is. Like, I know he's, you know, the Paul brothers are involved in, like, boxing and MMA and, you know, Nate Robinson and all that. But I can honestly say, like, I don't even remember why Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were feuding. Like, I don't remember why this match even took place, but I was just like, okay, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are having a match. Like, it's going to be awesome. Like, I don't really care. And I don't need a story. Like, they have what 15, like 10, 15 years of history. Like just where, you know, you're getting a good match, let alone the past 5-6 years in NXT and WWE. So this one really, like I alluded to earlier, like it probably should have opened the show. It didn't. And as Jesse in our Facebook comment section is noting, the only thing missing, if you want to say that, is we didn't get the pirate ship. We didn't get KO jumping off of a pirate ship. So I know he really wanted that. Maybe he did it like after the show when they're tearing the set down, but Owens hated. Oh, well, see, like everybody hated the documentary. So like we all should have had a match with Sami Zayn. Like that was, and yes, James, he should be applauded for his character work, but I just like during the match, I was like, I literally had a moment where I was like, why are they, it was like, I don't really care, but I'm like, why are they fighting again? Like, I just enjoyed it. Like, what did you guys think of it? Like, did it save the show? Am I giving it too much credit?
Go ahead, Colin.
It was weird because, like, the first two matches were a real letdown, and then this match was third, and I thought, all right, this will save the show. And instead, like, the show kind of wound up being this kind of like, you know, I don't know, those charts you used to see in math class would be like up and down, and, you know, this kind of a weird, like, inconsistent ride where, this match could have been even better if it did have more of a story there. And like then it really could have saved the show. I think I saw a tweet right before this match started that said, This match, I think it was like the first takeover match we've seen on the WrestleMania card, like a match that's been on takeover that was later kind of recreated on the WrestleMania card. And that seemed weird to me because their feud in NXT was great. These two guys have so much history even on the main roster. So kind of tying all that in, you would think this would have been a much more special match, but instead it was pretty much thrown together with this very loose motive with the documentary, and then you bring in Logan Paul. I get them mixed up. Well, you bring in the celebrity that didn't actually really matter, and then like that was kind of distracting because I kept thinking we were going to get some like Mike Tyson like moment where he'd come in and like either turn on Sammy or whatever it was, and then like you said, Bill, I was trying to figure out like, is this guy like that popular? Like, am I missing something? And that didn't happen. Then he really was a non-factor in the match itself. And he did eat a stunner, and a lot of people, myself included, like that. Because I don't know much about Logan Paul, but haven't heard the greatest things. So that was kind of a redeeming moment. The match was great, though. I saw a lot of people comparing it to Ring of Honor, with just kind of the very physical, fast-paced. It did feel like that kind of style. And I thought that was a nice kind of throwback for these two guys. They kind of made their name in Ring of Honor. So I enjoyed it a lot. I think it did prop up the show, the first half of the show. And I do think it could have been even better if it had more of a story. I was glad to see Kevin Owens win. He's a guy that kind of never gets to have those moments. He did beat Seth Rollins last year, but it feels like most of the time when he does get those wins, WWE doesn't really follow up on it. So I'm hopeful that after this, maybe he'll challenge Apollo or something to that effect. He was in the Universal title picture, so I don't want to see that for a long time. I talked about that on the SmackDown show. I got very burnt out on that feud. But by the same token, I wish Sami Zayn won. He's a guy, like Nando said, doing some amazing character work, and he's not getting really rewarded for it. He's not picking up his wins. Yeah, he had the IC title for a while, but I still want to see more for him, and now he took this loss, and it's not even like we're saying, like I said about Big E, no interference can't protect him, so he's just kind of coming out of WrestleMania on a cold streak. So I was a bit let down by that as well.
Yeah, I would say this didn't save the show. I would say it resuscitated it at the point in time. I feel and like those guys, I think, had a very good match though. Like, I think their chemistry is just on a total upper level of pro wrestling, a rivalry for the ages and stuff, Sammy and Kevin Owens. And, I thought what they portrayed and conveyed was very well done. And, but I also feel like, you add Logan Paul to that mix. It did create some intrigue starting off too, because I'm like, I don't know a whole lot about Logan Paul either. But he comes out and seeing how he handled himself on SmackDown, and like, he seemed good and handled it very well. So I was expecting a little bit more of a payoff than what we got with him in there. And then it's funny, cause like I transcribed something yesterday for the site, Eric Bischoff talking about Logan Paul and his value for WWE and then getting him. And like, even Conrad said at StarCast 4, when Fight TV was broadcasting that, they were also broadcasting the Logan Paul fight against another YouTube star. And that got huge, huge numbers for Fight TV and stuff. So like, he does have an audience that follows him around, like that do get engaged by it. So it would make sense to put him in there. And I almost feel like him getting stunned by Kevin Owens maybe sets it up for something down the road for him to be involved down the road again, and maybe more of a, I don't want to say to the level of Bad Bunny, but something to more of that effect than what we saw tonight. But yeah, it was a good match. I'm always for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens getting their moment in the spotlight. So this was, I would say, probably my second favorite match of the night behind the main event. So
Hashtag fight forever. I think we can end it there. I'll keep going chronologically. The next match was Sheamus against Riddle, who I thought had a fantastic backstage promo with the great Khali and RVD. As far as I know, this is the first time we've ever had a blatant marijuana advertisement on WWE TV. We got the RVD rolling papers. They didn't pass the torch. They passed the Dutch. I love that. Like, I thought, you know, if you're on the fence about Riddle, like, and he's very much a laid back guy and, you know, the original bro, all that. But I thought this just kind of like set the right tone, especially after, you know, the KO and Sami Zayn match. And I like the match. Like, you know, Riddle's a trained UFC fighter and Sheamus has always been a brawler, and it was hard hitting. It was fast paced. Sheamus picked up the win with a really cool move. Riddle went for a moonsault and Sheamus brogue kicked him like on the rotation on the way down, actually busted him open. I like the match. Like, I'm glad Sheamus is getting a win, especially after he kind of got put in a, you know, a dead end feud with Drew McIntyre. Like, I hate to say it, but that's really what it was. It was just kind of fodder for Drew to get to Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania. But I'm excited to see what Sheamus does here. And before I throw it to you guys, I do want to point out that Sheamus still hasn't won the Intercontinental title. And I know that's like, I forget what he called it, but instead of being a Grand Slam champion, it would be like he literally won every single title instead of like the tiers that, you know, like AJ Styles just won with the tag title win. But other than that, like, you know, what else do you guys feel like Sheamus has to do in WWE, or what else do you think he does next? Like, how do you feel about Sheamus coming out of WrestleMania?
You go first, Cole.
I mean, I felt pretty good about Sheamus. I was glad that he got essentially rewarded with this win. He's been doing some great work, especially for a guy that not too long ago, all the talk about Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, Edge, that, you know, they couldn't wrestle. Sheamus was a guy that was dealing with plenty of health problems as well. So, and a less like high profile way, it's very cool to see him in this featured spot. And now he's got the U.S. title. But it is interesting to think that he's done everything, essentially everything that he could. But he did kind of get shortchanged in the WWE title picture with this feud with Drew. So they could potentially explore that maybe in the summer, depending how this reign goes. I guess that's kind of risky because you don't want to have the Raw title scene get too like predictable or stale, where we saw him and Drew face off for like months on end. We've seen him face Bobby Lashley a couple times. But I think that's definitely something that a direction they could explore, even for like a one-off pay-per-view. But at the very least, I think this is a very good role for Sheamus right now, where he made Riddle look great even in defeat, and he can be a good kind of veteran staple of the Raw mid-card, where you've got plenty of talented people that are not going to utilize very, very well, whether it's Ricochet or Mustafa Ali or any number of other people. So if WWE wishes to like really do something with this title reign, that this could be really good for the entire Raw mid-card, not just Sheamus. So I like this match, and I like what it could mean for Sheamus in the short and long-term future.
I think you can make him like kind of almost your like, you know, open title challenge kind of thing again, almost. I think that would really heat him up again, like Sheamus, and establish him like in the title, like in a lot of ways. And so you just line up some opponents for him and have just like, just take people out left and right a little bit, like have good competitive matches, but you could kind of make it build. I think it would be very intriguing too. Like you asked where they go with Sheamus moving on from this. I think have him establish a very strong run here. And then like down the road, several months down the road, I think you can have him and do like almost like the title versus title in a way, or just have the champion versus champion of Bobby Lashley and Sheamus again. You can, I think if you build Sheamus up and make him more than what he is currently at, even at this point, I think that could still be an engaging feud going down. I thought the match was good. But honestly, like I just kind of felt like watching it too. I was like, well, it just feels like I'm watching an episode of Raw or SmackDown. Like kind of just had that vibe for me too. So not to take away from it at all, because it was good and they did a very good job, like, you know, but it just felt like, okay, I could watch this any day of the a Friday or a Monday. So there was that. I do have RVD rolling papers too, by the way. So welcome. So yeah, I popped for that segment. That was pretty cool. You know,
I tried going on the website and it actually crashed tonight. So I'm wondering if like it was legit. I was like, I put like, I share my thoughts on like our Twitter account all the time, but
sure.
I was like, oh man, like this is like a crazy segment. And I said something and I was like, oh yeah, by the way, like they are real. And I went to post the link and I clicked on the link.
Uh-huh.
And I got like some like site timeout error. Like I literally think his store crashed because so many people went and like,
how about tried that?
I hope for him, all these people went and bought rolling papers, but
his CBD is good. I got it back there. It's like, I tried it out and it does the job.
The oil or the gummies? Cause
I got, no, the flower. So,
okay.
Yeah. Rolled it up.
And I need to get that. Cause I've been taking it for like inflammation, and I couldn't even tell you what brand, or it's, you know, like it's just oil that helps with inflammation.
You feel very relaxed. Very relaxed.
Yeah. But like, no, like it you know, like I people are still like on the fence or like don't want to talk about it, but like CBD works. Like,
does.
If I'm like working out in my yard or I'm just like dehydrated or sore, like whatever, like I take a couple drops and I feel like pretty good. So I went on RBD's website and he has like all of these products and I was like, oh, I thought it was like one or two things, and he has like, you know, like an entire store. So yeah, I'm sure RBD's watching this right now after his Hall of Fame weekend. If anybody wants to tag him and let him know I'm confused about which product to buy first.
Okay. Well, here, Bill, when in the interview we did, he said, if you want to try something, if you're kind of a novice to it, he said, try the flower. So that's why I got the flower, was that one. He said, now I think on the site, or maybe he mentioned this too, was like, for, he's got the cream and that's his like most kind of effective product, I think he said, or kind of implied in that way. But like as a novice, which I am with CBD and stuff like that, he was like, go with the flower. And he's like, if you know, do the other stuff, you can mix that in. But he's like, even not, you just smoke it regularly and then that's fine. So I would recommend the flower there, Bill.
I remember the article. I don't remember, if I find it, I'll share the link, but I remember him talking about that. If you guys didn't know, Dom interviewed him in January, I think it was.
I think it was, yeah. Yeah.
But you can check out all of Rob's products at rvdcbd.com. Let's keep moving down the card. I'm gonna skip over the Nigerian drum fight because we kind of touched on that a little bit. But Rhea Ripley is the new Raw Women's Champion. She beat Asuka. I don't want to say she was the guaranteed favorite, but she was a strong favorite. I'm good with the win. Like, I feel like, you know, they've floundered on Asuka and it's not her fault. I think it's, you know, out of her hands. She has a dental issue going on right now where she has the implants. She got some teeth knocked out by Shayna Baszler a couple weeks ago. I thought it was a pretty good match. I didn't like the live performance, and I will note that because I know some people are like, oh yeah, it was fine. It was distracting. And I want to point out that one of our followers on Twitter pointed out, he said that he's done sound work for, I don't remember the band's name, but
Ash Costello.
Okay. Yeah. So he said he did like sound, like he was a sound tech for that band whenever they were in his like town or whatever, but he said that she only wears one earpiece and most singers wear two, like the in each ear. And that could have led to her not like her timing being off. And that's kind of what I thought was going on, because it seemed like she was trying to catch up at first. And then when she finally caught up, it just something was off. But I mean, once I finally got into the match, which honestly, like, I'm usually not that picky, but this was distracting. But once we got into the match, like, it was really good. I feel like Rhea looked great. She, like, what do you think she does as Raw Women's Champion? Like, she literally has had a handful of matches on Raw or on this level because she's been in NXT so long, and she did have more exposure with Charlotte Flair last year, but that was the NXT championship. She was part of Survivor Series at one point, but what do you expect from her going forward now that she's actually, you know, on the Raw roster? She's now the Raw Women's Champion. What do you think Asuka does next? I'll throw it to Colin first.
I think I see one, maybe even both of these possibilities just kind of throughout the rest of the year, even. You know, I think Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch are the two top options here. And I'm going to assume that Becky won't be back for another some time, right? Maybe that's a SummerSlam match. Maybe you build up Rhea Ripley for the summer and you have her kind of run through the competition. I've seen some people speculating that that's kind of the direction we could be getting. They've established that Rhea Ripley is going to be a heel here. So then you bring back Becky, pretty natural match there where you've got the big baby face coming back and this, you know, unstoppable heel. That feels like a very, you know, big fight feel there. And of course you got the history with Charlotte Flair. So, you know, but like you said, Bill, we had that match last year. And that this could be a fun way to kind of reverse those roles where now Rhea has the title again, and Charlotte's going to be challenging, but maybe this is the chance for Rhea to beat Charlotte and really establish herself as the premier woman superstar on Raw. I think that could be pretty cool. As for Asuka, I think, you know, maybe we get a rematch, a Backlash, and then she kind of feels like someone that at this point could really use a repackaging because she did have the title for a while and through no fault of her own, like you said, just it wasn't a good reign. And I know I was just disappointed with that every week. I want to see more from her. And now she had been battling this issue with her teeth, like you said, and that was a recent thing. But even before that, we're talking months of just nothing. I remember, I think it was like back in the fall, the whole thing where Lana won the Battle Royale. And like that was a storyline. She never really had a really credible opponent, you know, by and large. After her feud with Sasha Banks and Bayley ended, she was kind of floated around here and there. And then she teamed with Charlotte Flair. It did feel like we were going to get a match between Asuka and Charlotte, and then life got in the way, as it happens. So, you know, maybe some of these, the players that were on the board that got moved, like taken off, like Charlotte missed WrestleMania entirely. You know, and that she'll be coming back, Becky Lynch will be coming back. So kind of collectively, I think Rhea's win will be good for the Raw Women's Division. I think I would like to see Asuka kind of return to we were saying about Shayna Baszler. So this world beating, imposing, you know, superstar rather than your kind of generic champion that we've been getting recently. I think that's what I would like to see come out of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, yeah, Charlotte and Becky Lynch, I think, are like the big ones. I'm with you, Colin, and like, I think they could really wait it out for Becky. Her comment, like, you know, you make Rhea unstoppable and just go on a tear until she runs into Becky Lynch, maybe at around SummerSlam time. But I mean, you can set her up in a lot of ways. Io Shirai lost the NXT Women's title. You could call her up and have her feud a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we speak to how much depth there is to the WWE's women's division overall, not just Raw and SmackDown, but NXT as well. But you like look at that and like there is a lot of potential, like if they made the most of it, like, you know, somebody like a Ruby Riott, if you built her up, even like Liv Morgan's a lot of fun. People can really get behind. There's just a lot that they can choose from. It's just a matter of positioning them right. Same like you said too, with like Shayna Baszler, who we've been talking about. Like you can heat a lot of these gals up and put them as viable competitors against Rhea Ripley, that or at least create an interesting storyline for a short period of time till you build up to somebody like a Becky Lynch, or heck. So I think Jesse in the chat here mentioned Ronda Rousey too. That would be pretty damn amazing if you got her in the mix with Rhea Ripley. But yeah, I mean, there's the options. The options are there. It's just a matter of positioning them in the right place. What do you think, Bill?
I think we get some time off from Asuka just because she, you know, let that whole thing heal and let her, you know, give her a break. I agree that, you know, they kind of fumbled with her in the past few months. It wasn't just, you know, get the belt off of her. It was out of her hands. I wouldn't mind seeing a proper feud on Raw between Charlotte and Rhea. Mm-hmm. I feel like with Charlotte missing Raw and, or I'm sorry, with Charlotte missing WrestleMania, giving her, you know, what almost feels like a natural feud to step into, especially going off of everybody saying like, oh, she's just always in the title hunt and thrown into the matches. And I feel like use that to your advantage at this point, and just Rhea's going to be cheered. So I feel like that one is, you know, I think go with that. Charlotte, I don't want to say up and down, but I mean, you know, like the Lacey stuff, like Lacey Evans, you know, she's starting to expand her family. Like you can't really fault anybody in that situation. Like that's real life. That's more important than anything that you see on TV. So again, congratulations to her. You can't really say anything about Charlotte. It was out of her control, and so was being left off of WrestleMania to an extent. Like, you know, she the whole thing that Andrade explained, and Charlotte said she had COVID, and that's bigger than trying to rush her back for a program at WrestleMania. Like, yeah, it's important, but these people's health and well-being is more important. So she got some time off. If you want to bring her back, I think, you know, Rhea's the perfect person to do it. Like, now Rhea's the champion, the new champion, instead of the defending champion. And Charlotte can not only say like, hey, I'm Charlotte Flair, I already beat you once, but, you know, the fans could be like, oh, Charlotte's going to be the heel because she gets thrown into the title picture, or however you want to position that. But I think, you know, Rhea's first feud is going to be good. I just hope I hope they continue taking care of her.
DJ made a good suggestion. Sonya Deville would be a good one to come back. You know, somebody that we're not used to seeing too much there, you know?
I would be up for it if they can find a logical way to get her off of SmackDown. Maybe, I mean, honestly, it might be time for another draft. I don't really know. Like, I feel like things are finally settled enough where it used to feel like, I'm not looking at any dates right now, but it used to be like April and June was like, let's shake things up again. It's like, why? Like, now they're finally, like, they're finally in a good place with the rosters. And I feel like there's so many untapped stories where I don't want to mix it up, but I do like that idea because she has been absent in the ring, and I feel like they would be a good feud.
Yeah, they would.
But we'll see where they go for that. We've pretty much broken down the card in detail. Real quick, and we'll compare the, you know, night one and night two. But how do you guys feel overall about night two on its own? Like, how does it stand up as a WrestleMania event?
Colin, go first. I gotta grab my charger real quick.
Night two on its own. It's hard because, like, I think in a vacuum, like completely on its own, it'd be pretty good. But the fact that we literally had night one the night right before, and a show that was really pretty strong start to finish. Kind of comparatively, night two fell pretty short of that bar. And it's funny because like before the show, I really thought night two was in some ways a stronger card, as someone that was really excited for the Fiend match, as someone that was really looking forward to the main event. And then you had the Rhea Ripley Asuka match, all these things that were definitely like, you know, things to look forward to. Not all of them delivered. Some of them did. I did enjoy Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, but I think overall, like, especially because it's WrestleMania, this would have been a strong pay-per-view, but there is that hope that WrestleMania, that's supposed to be the best show of the year. So like I would say night two, you know, probably kind of missed the mark in terms of what you would want from a WrestleMania. And then if we've just to kind of expand to the overall, I think like overall was a really good WrestleMania, especially when you factor in, you know, the return of the fans really made it special. Bianca Belair's win was incredible. There's no way around that. That was an absolutely great way to end night one. Bobby Lashley winning was a very, very surprising move to open the show, and in a good way. Because it was so predictable that Drew would win, I was very caught off guard, happily so, that Bobby Lashley won. I'll say overall, definitely like a good WrestleMania. Night one definitely was the better of the two shows. I don't think I'll look back at night two as a bad show. I'll just look at it as one that definitely did not. That could have been much better. That's what I'll say.
I think night two of WrestleMania kind of really showed that what you can do with just having one night of WrestleMania. I don't think it made a case to have two nights of WrestleMania. Obviously, if you're really concerned about the length of it, yeah, you want to break it up into two nights. But if they were like, it just shows that like it was spread thin, and like WWE overall kind of needs to do a more solid job at building, enhancing these matches to make them seem more important than what they are, because so many of these kind of felt flat. And like I said, too, not to disparage the Matt Riddle and Sheamus match, because it was a good match, but it just felt like something that you could see on any day of on Monday or a Friday. So I think it, like, you pick like something like Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, the triple threat main event, and then you also take like, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, and I would even say like the tag match was pretty engaging for what it was with the women. You take that and you put that on, you merge that with a lot of the matches from last night, it would be a really, really good WrestleMania. So overall, I mean, night one was awesome. I did like, and I think the match of the whole event, both nights included, was Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. I still think, you know, just a straight up one-on-one match, the story that they told in that one, like Bianca Belair just utilizing her strength, and then Sasha fighting back against that, and a lot of good story elements to that. And then just the payoff at the end, I thought it exuded WrestleMania, and it was a great way to, and yeah, Colin, I like it that they opened with Drew and Bobby too. I think that was, it made it feel significant. It gave Drew that proper moment that he deserved from last year. And then Bobby, I think it just made perfect sense to keep the build on him too, because he's somebody that they're building towards and making bigger and bigger too. And him with MVP is just magic. And so was Hurt Business, but they screwed that up. But yeah, night one was a lot better. And it made it, night two made more of a case to have it on one night. So that's my thoughts.
I will say this, and I am looking at both cards right now, but obviously I'm going to give the win, so to speak, to night one, strictly based off of the Bad Bunny tag team match and Bianca beating Sasha. There was some really good stuff to like tonight, but WrestleMania as a whole, there was 14 matches. I feel like you probably could have cut two of them. And this is nobody, you know, nobody in particular, but I really feel like the tag team turmoil match didn't need to happen at WrestleMania. Like, you could have just had the title match, or you could have had the the tag team turmoil match be for the women's titles? And I'm sure you could find another one of those matches in there just to kind of cut it down to like a, you know, like 12 matches on one night is still a long night, but I'm looking at the match times and night one, you have Lashley and Drew McIntyre start with 18 minutes and 20 seconds, and every single match except for the Raw tag team title match was double digit minutes. So they, you know, went over 10 minutes. That was the shortest match, and it was 9 minutes and 45 seconds. You look at tonight, you have Randy Orton and The Fiend, 5 minutes and 50 seconds. And then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, as good as it was only 9 minutes and 20 seconds. And then Apollo Crews and Big E, 6 minutes and 50 seconds. So it's not like I was watching live tonight and thinking like, oh, this match was short or long. It was just last night definitely felt like it was more cohesive of a show than it was tonight. And I will say in hindsight today going in, I was like, all right, today has a lot to live up to. Like night one killed it, especially like I said, with the last two matches with Bad Bunny and then the women's title match, the SmackDown women's title match. I thought the triple threat main event tonight really delivered. I really enjoyed Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, but after that, I mean, I enjoyed the Nigerian drum fight. They didn't really use any drums, so it pretty much boiled down to it being like a street fight or a no DQ match, but I liked that. But then the other matches on the card were just kind of like, you know, they were good, but are they WrestleMania good? And I mean, you have 37 years of, you know, putting it on that platform. So like, I'm kind of thinking like, is it a WrestleMania match? Is it not? I think, you know, I think night one, Clearly was the better night. It felt like a more balanced show. I enjoyed the Bayley stuff. I don't really think we should get into she should have done more. Like, I feel like we talked about that enough, but I enjoyed that tonight, so I will say that. So maybe that kind of ate up some of the match times, but I'm just going to leave it at that. I enjoyed night one more, but I'm glad that the triple threat closed tonight, because if it was a different match, people would be saying like, okay, night two was a complete loss, and it wasn't. There was good stuff. There was a great main event, and I think that's what matters leaving the weekend. It's just, you know, the SmackDown Women's Championship match was by far the best match of the weekend. So,
yeah, I have seen some people saying that they wish that Bianca and Sasha main evented tonight so that the show overall ended on that note. Because as good and like, it's kind of hard to, you know, I don't know. There's something to be said for both main events. You know, name ending the one night and the other night, having Roman Reigns and that triple threat match close the overall show. That was like the biggest match. But at the same time, if the plan was to have Roman retain, I think we were talking about it before the show. Like when you the main event of night two is technically the main event. Like night one is a main event, but the final match of the second show is what people will really remember. In a lot of ways. So, and people will remember Bianca winning. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, just get to have that lasting feeling of Bianca winning could have been, even more like, you know, enjoyable, more necessarily than Roman Reigns winning. And, you know, because like, I don't know, there's something to be said for sometimes I think title changes are, well, I guess they are more exciting than title defenses. And, that doesn't take away from and like good title defenses, but I do think there's some merit to the idea that Bianca actually, like, that match being the final match of the overall show might have redeemed tonight in some sense as well. Even though, you know, having the triple threat did prop up night two, it's kind of a mixed bag in that sense.
Yeah, I think with that, I think a lot of it with night two closing out with Reigns and Daniel Bryan and Edge, you have such star power and name cachet there that that's how you know, if you're going to end a WrestleMania, you're going to want to have those names. I think obviously Sasha Banks is such a big star. Bianca Belair is still at this. Now she's a star and she's on her way to major stardom. But like even before that, like she's still somebody that's proving herself in a lot of ways. So it's like having it, that close out the second night would have been intriguing. But I think it also might have done that those two a little bit of a disservice, because it's like, you know, you have it. If you switch the main events each night, it would have been like, okay, wow, that's the big one. Like that's what happened with Reigns and all that stuff. And, you know, but then a lot of people's expectations would be like, oh, night two might be a little rough. Like, even though, you know, it's just because that name cachet is not there at the end. But I mean, obviously I think a lot of this WrestleMania 37, the big takeaway is going to be Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks, like going through your, if like anytime I look back at WrestleManias, I always kind of pick what match really stood out and stole that show. And like, that's going to be the match that I'm going to think of for WrestleMania 37. That's kind of what's going to define it or epitomize it for me, I guess.
I'm going to agree and say the women's match should have main evented tonight. I think people are going to remember WrestleMania for that match. That is not a dig at the triple threat that closed tonight. I just think that's going to be, like, if you have to pick a singular moment, that's going to be the moment that people remember this year from, or remember it by. I kind of, and I don't know if this is true, but I kind of understand why they let the triple threat main event tonight. And I honestly think it has to do with the story of three guys all coming back from their respective, you know, potentially career ending things. Roman had leukemia and Edge and Daniel Bryan had Edge, his career was over and Daniel Bryan was over, but he came back first and then it was Edge. So I understand why they did it. And I think that's probably the reason, like, you want, like, plus the triple threat adds to, you know, the uncertainty of who's going to win. But yeah, I feel like, you know, the women's match probably should have main evented because of the historical context, but I'm not going to take away from the triple threat. And on the other hand, I'm not going to take anything away from, you know, what match main evented each night. Like, I loved night one. I enjoyed night two. Obviously, we've kind of shared. I enjoyed night one more. But I thank you, James, for the shout out. Follow everyone on Twitter. Yeah, I'm honestly, I just want to kind of sum up. I appreciate everybody watching tonight and sticking with us, but I am glad that this show, you know, like, fans were back, people enjoyed it. It seemed like everything went off without a hitch, even with the weather. Like, it still was a really enjoyable, like, night one. I feel like if the weather happened tonight, maybe it would have changed the mood, but I'm happy with WrestleMania. It's in the books. If Peacock gets their shit together, we can go watch individual matches back. Until then, I'm going to say thanks for sticking with us tonight. Keep sticking with us throughout the week. We'll have all the follow-up from Raw, SmackDown, NXT. We'll see where it goes from there. And enjoy wrestling. I don't know how else to put a cap on it other than that. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.